On the one hand, the situation seems bleak. There's a study that was done by the Jewish People Policy Institute that discovered that of the Jews between the ages of 25 and 54, only half of them are married. And of the half that are married, 60% are married to non-Jewish spouses. What that says about the future is literally scary. Only 50% are married, and of the 50%, and that's the prime age group of having children, Jewish children, and 60% of them to non-Jews. So it's a very serious problem. If you take another quick look at something, before 1970, 83% of Jews were married to Jewish spouses. Between 2005 and 2013, the number reduced to 42, cut in half, 42% that are married to Jewish spouses, and the situation is just getting worse. So we have a serious problem confronting us. Some people don't care. You know, okay, so what? The Jewish people were around longer than anybody else, you know, 4,000 years since Avraham Avinu, and if we'll disappear off the face of the earth, like, who could care less? Others are startled and shocked by such statistics, and they really want to do something about it, but they may not be sure what. But it's very important to deal with this in some way and to find some strokes that make sense and at least can make a difference. Now, we do know that the key to the difference, this has been proven statistically time and again, and is very logical as well, and that's Jewish education. The statistics for graduates of day schools and intermarriage are much lower than those that never went to day school. The statistics of intermarriage for those that went to yeshiva high school are much lower for intermarriage than those that didn't go to yeshiva high school and base medrash and so forth and so on. So education seems to be the way. But what we're discovering today is that education is a very vague word. There's education, there's education. And even in Jewish education, there's so many different strains. And it seems logical that unless we could find the right approach, or the most powerful approach, the right nusach, if you will, of presenting and of developing, presenting, and reaching them with this Jewish education, then we will certainly may compromise and may not have the intended powerful effect. And I'd like to go back to a very significant event in history about 150 years ago, which may have a lot of relevance for us today and maybe set the tone and the derech, if you will, to be able to make some significant differences today. And that was that in 1882, the Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel founded the Slabodka Yeshiva. Slabodka Yeshiva was, after Volozhin, Volozhin was called that also, but after Volozhin, Slabodka was called the mother of the yeshiva world, because the vast majority of the teachers, the Rosh Yeshivas, the Gedolim, of the next generation, of the next two generations, were products, two to three generations, were products of the Slabodka Yeshiva. I happen to have here a list. They made a list of 100 of the major Rosh Yeshivas in the United States and in Eretz Yisrael, who are all products of the Slabodka Yeshiva. It's a very interesting list. Some of the names are the most famous names that we're aware of. Some of the names we may not have been aware of, but it goes on and on and on. And they had the major impact on the next generation or two. And not only that, some that are not on this list are known to be not Talmidim of Slabodka, but Talmidim of the Talmidim of Slabodka. like Reb Moshe Feinstein, his two Rebbeim, Reb Pesach Pruskin and Reb Issa Zalman Melzer, were both Talmidim of Slabodka. So the list goes on and on. The impact of this Slabodka approach was far-reaching into future generations. So I thought that maybe studying a little bit about that approach might be helpful in developing a formula that might at least begin to do something significant to limit, if not begin to reverse, the tragic trends that exist in the Jewish world today. And in a very simple summary of the Slabodka approach, which was written some 700 years before the Alter was born, interesting, but a very interesting summary of the Slabodka approach, can be found from the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, and this is just a translation to make it easier, the first gateway to serving Hashem, which is the goal of keeping people Jewish, is for man to know his own worth and to recognize his lofty stature and the lofty stature of his ancestors. This is the Gadlus Ha'odom that Slabodka became famous for, written by the Rabbeinu Yonah so many centuries earlier. Their greatness, their importance, and their preciousness to Hashem. Critical ingredients. Greatness, importance, and preciousness to Hashem. He should constantly strive and strengthen himself to reach that lofty level. He should say to himself, I am a great and important person with many exalted positive attributes. A person has to learn to recognize and to say to himself means to remind himself about his lofty and important attributes. I am a son of great men and a descendant of royal lineage. I'm from royalty, B'nai Melochim. How can I commit this terrible sin? I can't do stupid things. I can't do inappropriate things. I can't do evil things. Recognizing who I am and where I come from, it's like, you know, like the ultimate sin is pastnished. It's not nice. How could you do such a thing? Therefore, one should constantly make an effort to appreciate his worth. You should know and understand that if you serve Hashem to the best of your ability, you can reach this lofty level. And that's also a very important thing. The lofty level is not objective. There's an objective lofty level that everyone has to reach, but it's subjective to each person. As it says here, you should know and understand that if you serve Hashem to the best of your ability, you can reach this lofty level. Because the lofty level is defined by reaching my potential, which, by definition, and which in the real world, is very, very high, very, very lofty. So this is really a goal. This has been the goal. This was very strongly adapted. This was very strongly adapted by the Slabodka Yeshiva. This was the major teaching of the Alter. And it went very far to make a difference in the quality of the Talmidim and in the appreciation of the Talmidim for their purpose in life and in their ability to rise to the occasion. But I think there's another piece that was also very much part of Slabodka and very much a part of the message and the power that we have to reach Klal Yisrael, to reach ourselves, and then to reach Klal Yisrael. But before we do that, I think we should just mention something else. And this has been mentioned many times, but I think it's a critical ingredient. If the situation out there is dire, then even if we have a formula which seems could work by uplifting people, by getting people to recognize their own self-worth, by getting them to recognize where they come from, by getting them to recognize their royalty, and by inspiring them to live up to who they truly are, we also have to be confident that that this message can resonate with them. Maybe people are so turned off that they're not even interested in such a message, that it's irrelevant to them. Like, you know, don't bother me. I'm not interested. I left this stuff a long time ago. So for that, I like to quote the famous famous story, I guess, that we know that Rabbi Aryeh Levine once saw that Rabbi Chaim Berlin, when he was in Yerushalayim in his later days, he would say Shir HaShirim on Erev Shabbos, and when he came to the Pasuk, Einayich Yoinim, your eyes are like the eyes of doves, of the Yoina, so he would cry. And Rabbi Aryeh asked him, why do you cry when you say that Pasuk? So he says, I'm going to tell you why. He says he was a Rav in Moscow, and once in the middle of the night, person came to him, not a religious person, says, you must come with me right now to perform a bris milah on my son. And it was a sakona those days. It was against the law. They could, who knows what they could do to you if they caught you. He comes with him. He performs the bris. And then he asks him a question after that. He says, I don't get it. He says, you're not religious. Why do you put your life, my life too maybe, in danger to do a bris? Like, Why such Mesiras Nefesh? So he says to him, he says, I'm not religious. I doubt if I ever will be. I don't think my son will ever be religious either. But I want to know that if ever he wants to come back, that he'll find a way. It'll be easy for him. He has a bris. He's already part of the covenant. He's part of the fold. And that's why I went to this extreme. Now, Chaim Berlin continued and he said, that's what Chazal say. On the Pasuk, Einayich Yoinim, Chazal say that the yoina is a bird that when it leaves the nest to search for food, it never goes far enough away that it can't see its way back. It's always assuring itself and making sure that it will find its way back. He says, and that's what a Jewish person is, that no matter how far he drifts, he will find his way back. And someone told me that when I mentioned this thing, so someone told me that he met a guy who was off the derech, you know, he studied in yeshiva and went off the derech, and he was tattooed all over. But he noticed that his left arm was clean, didn't have any tattoos. So he asked him, what happened, why? So he says, in case I ever want to come back and I want to put on tefillin, I don't want there to be a chatzitza there. I don't want anything there. I want to be able to put on tefillin. That's the Jew. No matter how far he runs, he's always looking to find his way back. So I think that we have to realize that Klal Yisrael is reachable. Klal Yisrael is always looking back. Some people are looking consciously, physically, some people consciously, conceptually, some people subconsciously. But everybody is looking. That's the nature of Klal Yisrael. Einayich Yoinim, Shleima HaMelech was made that that is the Klal Yisrael. That no matter how far away they go, they always are in a position where they're looking back and making sure that they can eventually return. So we certainly have a lot to work with. Now, one of the things that Slabodka taught the world, I shouldn't say taught the world, that's not a fair statement, but one of the things that Slabodka certainly represented was, and the Alter did not give shiurim, he was not the Rosh Yeshiva, he was the Mashkiach, but he was the father of the Yeshiva, he was the driving force of the Yeshiva, he was the Rebbe to all the Talmidim of the Yeshiva, and to a very broad section of Klal Yisrael. He sent out his Talmidim to start yeshivas all over Europe. It was really like, you know, this was the hub. This was where so much, maybe the majority, maybe the vast majority of the activity that went on was emanated from. And one of the things, one of the pillars of his approach, which it has been said that it had an impact on the entire yeshiva, was the level of pursuit of truth in his Musa Shmuisen. It wasn't Shmuisen to inspire and I'll come up with some inspirational idea, and it's going to motivate people, and it's going to inspire them, and they're going to cry, or they're going to laugh, or they're going to something. But this will be spiritually uplifting. It was a meticulous diktug to assure that the ideas that I present are based totally and completely and derived from, not put into, like not interpretation, putting my ideas into the Chazal, but rather explanation derived from the Chazal, with a meticulous concern that I'm dealing with truth. The truth of Chazal, the truth of Torah Misinai, knowing that that has the greatest force, the greatest penetrating power to the Jewish neshama. And it was done in a way, of course, obviously I wasn't there, although I did have the privilege of confirming this approach with a significant number, a real sampling of the greatest of the Talmidim of the Alta in my younger years, when these people were still available. And this approach that was described to me, how battles ensued after a Shmuis to argue, to see, well, is that what Chazal mean? Could it mean something else? How do you know for sure? Is it clear? Is that what the language says? Does that make sense? Does that fit into everything, every step of the way? Can we be sure that we're studying and reflecting and teaching and presenting the truth of Torah Misinai, rather than some human, great human beings' ideas that were, you know, put inside? And that's really what Slabotka contributed. And that, it has been said by Gedolim, that affected the Derech and learning as well, because the mood was a mood of discovering and extracting the truth from Chazal, rather than allowing Cholila, even in the slightest way, as much as possible, to keep out my own personal ideas being put in as interpretations, not necessarily to be proven with a clarity that this, in fact, is what Chazal mean. And this affected everything that was done, I would say, in Musar and in learning, and in Hanhoga too. And Alta was very makbid on what we do being emes. He would often, I think it's attributed to him, the vort where the Gemara in Chulin says that one Amira says that I'm not on the level of my father. My father waited 24 hours between meat and milk, and I only wait 6 hours. So the Alta asked the question. He says, so why couldn't this Amira wait 24 hours? You don't even have to fast. You could have something that's parav. So he couldn't wait 24 hours. He's not on the level. There it says, he's not on the level of his father. His father, the Zihirus, in waiting, in concern for Bosov Acholov, meant something on his level. But if this one would have done it, it would have been just actions, empty actions, because I'm not on that level. And therefore, just to copy it. And Lifnim Mishuras Adin has to be true. Everything we do has to be true. If it's halacha, it's true. We're doing it. But if it's Lifnim Mishuras Adin and I'm not holding there, then that's not appropriate. And that's permeated the entire atmosphere in Slabotka. There was something else that was part of the Slabotka tradition. In addition to the recognition of the godless Odom, in addition to the search and the meticulous adherence and commitment to make sure that what we do and what we say and what we learn is true. And there was another piece, I think, that's also very, very relevant. And that was the commitment to Arbosos Torah, to teach. Slabotka was, the Alta was involved, and through his yeshiva and through his Talmidim, in a massive development of yeshivas and moistis ha-Torah throughout Europe, then Eretz Yisrael eventually, and eventually his Talmidim came to America. But there was this emphasis on our achrayis to Klal Yisrael. And there's a very powerful statement in the Chovas HaLevavos of the Shaar Avos Hashem, Perek Vov, where the Chavis Avovis writes as follows: Roy Lecho Achai, should know, my brothers, Ladas, to know. His Chuyos Hamamin, the merit of the one who is a believer, a real mamin. Afilu em yemagia el hatachlis or a choiko betikun nafshil elukim yisborach. Even if he reaches the highest level of the tikkun of his nefesh, he's perfected himself to the highest levels of avodas Hashem. The ilu hoyu korov lemalochim b'midosim hatoivos. And even if he was close to the malochim in their good midos and in their good actions, hamishubochim v'hishtadlusim b'avodas Hashem, and their hishtadlus in serving Hashem, mamish like a malach. V'avosim hazakoboy. And the purest love to Hashem. If he reached this madrega, einom kischuyos mishemeira b'nei odem el haderech hatoivo. They're not equal. They're not like the schuyos, the merits of a person who teaches people to go on the right path. Umeyasher horishoyim el avodas haboyrei. And he straightens out the rishoyim, the evil ones, to the service of Hashem. Sheschuyosov nichpolois ba'avur schusom b'chol hayomim v'chol hazmanim. Because his schusim are going to be exponentially multiplied because of the schusim of all the people that he impacted. He impacted one, and this person will impact others. He'll have children, have grandchildren, have talmidim, will have people that are affected by him. This goes on and on and on and on exponentially. And b'meila, no matter what spiritual height a person achieves, it's not comparable to the schus that a person who is teaching the in his lashon shemayre bnei odem eladerech hatoivo umeyasher horishoyim elavodas haboyrei. So this was another tenet of the Slabotki Yeshiva. And I think that there was, of course, the very, very special emphasis on Musar. And the emphasis on Musar was really not just the inspirational Musar, but it was very much also the Chochmah of Musar. And again, as we mentioned, the strength of this Chochmah was that it had to be true. It had to be clear. We had to be sure that this idea was extracted from the text rather than forced into, and in reality just giving my own personal ideas. So the Musa had a tremendous impact because it was kemeshe mipi agvura. It was on the authority coming directly, knowing that this is what Rashi says, this is what the Ramban says, this is what the Maseiros Yeshurim says, this is what the Shari Tshuva says, this is what Chazal say, direct from Sinai, with that full authority, and the Melech had much more power to be able to impact the individual. Now, these are... these are some of the basic principles that were involved in the Slabotka approach. They were passed down to Talmidim. Different Talmidim took different parts, different pieces, each one according to his own personality, his own kishreinus, his own koiches, his own sheirish haneshoma, like they say. But this certainly impacted the world in which we live today, and in the continuation of this approach, as much as possible, this certainly is a formula for great success. I just had this talk was delivered on Shabbos, that's why I'm trying to piece it together again today. I just had the privilege of attending a convention over Shabbos of the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva and its alumni, and where I presented a talk similar to this. And it was very interesting to note, as Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky used to say in different words, that it seemed to me that Slabotka was alive and well, that the tenets of Slabotka that we have mentioned here in terms of the emphasis on the Gadlus HaOdom, in terms of the emphasis on truth, in terms of the emphasis on Habosas Torah, in terms of the emphasis on Musar, that these factors and forces and shittas and commitments seem to be you know, doing quite well in the approach, in the derech and the commitment of the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva. And there's a strong emphasis, of course, on the Slabot Gemusar, on the Gadlus HaOdom, and on Musar B'Chalichlal. Rabbi Aaron Cutler was there speaking, gave some very, very informative sessions there. But he pointed out, which was a very interesting observation, he says, I've been to many conventions, but I never was at a convention where each day of the convention they had a Musa Seder. There was 15 minutes set aside on Friday and on Shabbos for a Musa Seder. He says, that says something. Musa is still alive and well. It's not just a relic of the past, which was a very, you know, very, very interesting and correct observation. But it was really, you saw it in action. You saw, you know, the commitment to our Musa Seder. People were gathered from all over the country. Who came, people who were involved in Arbos HaSteira, and just to be machazik themselves and share of their experiences and of their inspiration. It was a very, very beautiful thing. But there was something there that was very disturbing. And I would like to share that with you as well. And I think that there's something there that was quite disturbing. And let me begin this with a story. The Chofetz Chaim was the undisputed giant of his generation. He was, I mean, his word was law. Had, you know, the ultimate respect of everyone. He wrote a Mishnah Brura, which has been accepted, be called Tfutzis Yisroel. They say it took him 28 years to compile a Mishnah Brura, from what I understand, learning 12 hours a day. So, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said about the Chofetz Chaim, the Mishnah Brura made Rabbi Yisrael, who was the giant already of the previous generation, he said, the Mishnah Brura, maybe I could have written. The Sefer Chofetz Chaim on Hilchos Lashon Hara, I definitely couldn't have written. That was taken from Kol HaTorah Kula, an original work without almost anything to base it on, and with such power and such hekif and such havona and such hachro, he says, Rabbi Yisrael said, that for sure I couldn't have written. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. Anyway, so the Chofetz Chaim was a giant of his generation. When the Chofetz Chaim's son and the Briskarov, that was the Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's son, Reb Velvel, had an argument in learning, and they went to Reb Chaim to be machria. Reb Chaim sort of chastised his son and said, who are you arguing with Yashrus? You don't argue with the Chofetz Chaim's mishpocha. It's Yashrus there. He was known for his Yashrus. He was known. Anyway, but the Chofetz Chaim had a problem. And the problem was, he was also a tzaddik of unbelievable proportions. His tzidkus was, you know, like they say today, off the charts. I don't know whose charts and what charts, but off the charts. And it turns out that in the Welt, because of his tzidkus, many people pointed out that his goyness was overshadowed. People looked to the Chofetz Chaim as the tzaddik rather than the goyin. The tzaddik rather than the godel of his generation. And it's unfortunate because he was both. But sometimes the tzidkus overshadows it. And it's my feeling, and I really, you know, in watching this Chofetz Chaim convention in action and in knowing what the mood in the world, in the yeshiva world, what goes on, I had, I felt very disturbed. Because I think that because of the intense commitment to Arbos HaSteirah that the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva has had since its inception and actively since the first yeshiva that was started was in 1966, and then there was a couple of years at Kufa, and then beyond that, it was like like all over the map. The map, they have this beautiful map dotted with Moises HaTorah that they have developed all over the country and in Eretz Yisrael as well. And because of that, it seems to overshadow, like the Chofetz Chaim's Tzidkus overshadowed his godless, it seems to overshadow the other elements of the yeshiva program, which are also intense. The chashivus of learning, the extent of learning, the demands on intensive, on in-depth learning, and on a bikiyah seder. You know, in Europe, everybody knew that there was an iyun seder in the morning, and there was a bikiyah seder in the afternoon and at night. And today in the Welt, it's sometimes not so benimtza. Other things have developed, whatever they may be. But here, the Chofetz Chaim, they stick to that. And the years of learning, finish the yeshiva after 6 years, another 6 years in koil, you get married, 6 years in koil, that's, you know, smicha, yora, yodin, yodin, high standards, really demands. In fact, many years ago, when there was a meeting called to form a rabbinical group to be an alternative to the group on the right, the group on the left, and the Agudas Rabbonim on the right, which whose standards were very high. They had to have yora, yodin, yodin, smicha, and you know, it was more the European rabbis and the American rabbis coming out of the yeshivas would not qualify for that. So it was a meeting that was held to organize another rabbinic organization for this younger group, so to speak. And the Rosh Yeshiva, Penach Leibowitz, Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, who had recently taken over the yeshiva after the patira of his father, came to the meeting. The meeting was Gedolei HaRabbonim and Rosh Yeshivas there. And he got up and he said that his father would be against such an organization because his father believed that for Rabbonim to go out into the world, they should have to study many more years and get the smicha of Yora, Yora, Yodin, Yodin. So at least there should be a higher standard for Rabbonim. And it's a young man. It took a lot of, guts, you know, to stand and speak in front of all these gedolim. But that was the commitment, that always has been the commitment, and that continues to be the commitment. So it's a little bit painful to see sometimes that because of the commitment to Arbotzes Torah, that it sort of overshadows the extent to which the appreciation of the emphasis on learning and the chashivus of learning exists there as well. And I think it's somewhat unfortunate to be so misunderstood. You know, the Rosh Yeshiva Zecharenu Levracha always used to quote Rabbeinu Yoina, who speaks about the difference between Leiman Amanas Lalameid and Leiman Amanas Lasois. What is Leiman Amanas Lalameid? Maspikim Biyodu Lilmud Lalameid, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Leiman Amanas Lasois? Maspikim Biyodu Lilmud Lalameid, Lishmo Lasois. So Rabbeinu Yoina says, Chas V'Sholem, that the Leiman Amanas Lalameid is not interested in doing mitzvahs, but he's not the same level of Bakoshas or Emes. His striving for Emes is not the same as Leiman Amanas Lasos. He wants to get every single Nakuda of every Aloha straight. And in the Loshon of the Rabbeinu Yoina, his willing Lahatriach is Atzmoy Yomim Vishonim Lahasig Dover Koton. He's willing to put in the effort to spend days and years to even understand and to reach one small detail, one Dover Koton. This is the definition, it seems, from Rabbeinu Yoina, of Emes. And that Emes, to a great extent, exists today, Baruch Hashem, in the emphasis on the Iyun. The Iyun Seder is one of intense pursuit. And sometimes, I don't think it's Shonim, but sometimes it's a lot of Yomim and maybe more, to achieve a Dover Koton, and that's really a prime definition of what it means to be Mevakish Emes. And it's unfortunate that such a commitment should be overshadowed by the fact that there is such a commitment to Harbosas Torah, and therefore it looks as if the learning is secondary. So I think that that when we take this all together, however, I think the message is very clear. Just to to take it maybe one step further, the famous Gemara where the Pasuk says, Al me'o of the Ha'oretz, why was Eretz Yisrael destroyed in the Churban Bayis Rishon? So it says, Nechachomim didn't know, the Nevi'im didn't know, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Al ozom es torosi asher nasati b'seichom, until they had forsaken my Torah. So the Gemara in Bav Metzia explains, Shaloi berchu b'Torah t'chila, they didn't say berchas ha'Torah. Whatever that means, and Rashi explains that it was even though they were learning, the Lashon of Rashi is that the kiva deloi mevorchi, since they were learning, but they were, didn't say birchas ha'Torah, galya daitayu she'eino matona chashuva lahem. They revealed in their minds that this wasn't such a matona chashuva. If the Torah is not a matona chashuva, then Chazal equate that to ozvo, al ozvo mes torosi. It's kinyo they had forsaken the Torah. Forsaken means we've left it. If we don't appreciate the chashivus, the matona chashuvo, then it's as if we had forsaken the Torah altogether. And that's why the Hashem told them, the churban was al ozvo mes torosi asher nasati lahem. We have to appreciate it's a matona chashuva. Learning Torah is a matona. It's a gift from Hashem. It's a privilege. And it's so choshev. We appreciate what learning means. Now, the appreciation for learning is certainly enhanced by the intensity with which we pursue the truth. Because if this is a matona chashuva from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it's the ultimate truth. If I'm not focused on achieving that truth, then I'm not appreciating the extent of that matona chashuva. And I think that's part of the formula that we need to really make a difference in the world today. I believe that we have to know that we can make a difference. We have the tools to make a difference. Slabotka taught us those tools. Conveying the chashivus of Etzelem Elokim, the chashivus of a person, how choshev he is, how privileged he is, how great he is, what koiches he has. Combining that with the sense and the power of the truth of Torah, recognizing the receptivity that exists within each and every neshoma, that every neshoma is craving to come back. He has already paved the path, whether consciously or subconsciously, the route back, no matter how far he has distanced himself. He didn't put the tattoo on the left arm because he wants someday to be able to put tefillin on again, and it shouldn't be a chatzitza. And when we realize that, and combine that with an appreciation for the achrayus of Avos HaTorah, and combine that with the musar and with the chashivus of learning and conveying that chashivus and that excitement for learning, it's a winning combination. You know, Reb Simcha Wasserman was a pioneer in Kiruv on the West Coast in the 50s and 60s. It's known. In fact, after speaking, somebody came over to me and told me that he is married to one of these, the grandchild or something, from one of these families who became Balei Tshuva. He used to travel every week to Santa Barbara. Must have been like an hour and then three-quarter trip or something like that. And he would learn Chumash with a group of completely irreligious Jewish people. Somebody, I think, discovered them when they went there to raise money, or they brought a pushka there or something, you know, for his yeshiva. So whatever happened, he went to teach. These people were not religious, and he didn't ask anything of them other than that they come to learn. But one thing he was makbid on, that before they would start to learn, he would recite with them Birchas HaTorah. Asher bochar bonu mikol ha'amim v'nosa lono esterosei. I don't think it was out of frumkeit that he was afraid of teaching them if they didn't say Birchas HaTorah. In fact, when I finished this, someone else came over to me and said that Reb Aaron Kotler once sent a group of people to learn with some non-frum people in Lakewood, and somebody was Me'ira, they didn't say Birchas HaTorah yet. They went back and told Reb Aaron, he said, he's Meshuggah. Imamish was like, you know, Meshuggah, that's what you're worried about. They didn't say Birchas HaTorah. You have to save their lives, you know. So like, I doubt that Reb Simcha, I knew Reb Simcha well. That wasn't his thing. But Reb Simcha understood that if the Torah is not a matono chashuva beinehem, then it's not going to reach its mark. But if they had to say Birchas HaTorah Shebo Charbonu Mikol HaAmim V'Nosan Lanu Es Toros, like, this is a Matana Chashuva, then already it has a much greater impact. And it's not together Ozvam Es Torosi. It's to the contrary, they embrace the Torah. So I think that if we're armed, and if the next generation will be armed with that sense of the chashivas ha'odom and the tzelem elikim, like the Rabbi Yoina says, and the chashivas ha'tira and its power to penetrate, and the belief in the reachability and the desire of every Jewish neshama to eventually be able to return to the Torah, and with Musar, and with a massive and major and overwhelming commitment to our Botzes Torah and the realization of what a schus it is, I think there's a very good, we can make a major impact on the world out there and really make a difference in some of these ugly statistics. And I'd just like to conclude with a word to those who might be a little skeptical about the ability to reach people today. And unfortunately, I heard some undercurrents about people who are skeptical today. Nobody listens, nobody cares. We live in a generation, there's no real interest in anything in life, and they don't pay attention, they have no patience, all kinds of reasons. I just want to say one thing. The Novi Yeshaya, I think it's in Kapitel Emperik Membeis, it's the Haftarah of Parshas Bereishis. He talks to the leaders of his generation and he says, Chershim Shmo, deaf ones, you listen here. And blind ones, look. Deaf and blind, he calls them. He says, and who is he speaking to? He says he's speaking, the Metzudas learns Pshat, and the Psukim the next says he's speaking to the Yereim Ushleimim of his generation. Shleimim b'midois. Avdei Hashem, the highest level, Kimalochi Eshloch, like Malochim. He's speaking to the giants, the Tzadikim, the giants of his generation. And he says, you didn't do what you should have done to reach out to, I think the Lashon of Metzuda uses, lahatztik es azulas, to be matztik people, to lead people in the derech ha-yosha, to lead them back to the derech ha-toyro. And then he says the next pasuk, Hashem chofetz v'man tzidko yagdil tora v'yadir. And one of the Metzuda learns, he says to them, haloike chefes Hashem bochem. Is lahatztik es azulas. What does Hashem want from you? He wants you to reach out to help these people, to guide them back to the Torah. So what's going on over here? He calls them blind and deaf. He tells them to listen and to look and listen. He's addressing the greatest shleimim of his generation. And they didn't do what they should have done to reach out to others. I don't understand. Could it be that the shleimim of the generation, shleimim b'midois, b'avdus Hashem, so many mitzvahs, v'avdus Hashem l'kecho, she'ishim shomayim yisai v'al yodcho, v'avdus reicho kamoicho, v'chechto chesa misecho, arvus kiddush Hashem, so many mitzvahs to reach out and to help others, and they didn't do it? And there Yireyim u'shleimim, he addresses them, kemalochi eshloch. They're like on the level of human perfection of Malochim. What's going on here? The teretz is, it must be that they wanted to do it. They just saw it to be impossible. Impossible. We can't do it. We tried. We want. We can't. We didn't. And that's why he calls them blind and deaf, because they're missing something. It's impossible. We can't reach Jews in such a matzah. So he answers them, Haloike chefetz Hashem bochem. This is your purpose. This is what you're here for. If this is my purpose, that Hashem chofetz l'man tzidkoy, that's what Hashem put me here for, then all of a sudden my eyes open up, my ears open up. I begin to see the impossible that was as being truly possible. Because I know this is my calling. This is what I must do. This is the call of the hour. And that psychologically gives a person the ability to see things that he never could have seen, to see through all of the smoke screens and obstacles, the illusionary obstacles, some of them are serious, but that can be penetrated with the knowledge that this is the call of the hour. I think Rabbi Yisrael Salanta in his time paskin that for these generations, this is the call of the hour. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta himself says that he sacrificed his own personal shleimus, which was, in working, spending all the time working on himself, to give up so much for Klal Yisrael. And with the appreciation of the Galus Odom, and with the appreciation of the Chshivas HaTorah, and with the commitment to the learning that the emes, and to be pursuing the emes with an intensity throughout our lives, if we recognize that we do have this responsibility of our Botzes Torah, that we can truly make a difference. But we can only make that difference if we are constantly, forever, working on our own shlemus. If I am aware of my own godlus and work to improve that every day, and I am aware of my own commitment to truth and learn intensively every day in order to enhance that appreciation and that understanding of truth, and Musa to develop myself in midas and in every possible way, and take all of this personal shlemus, as I'm growing in personal shlemus with the realization of that imperative of reaching out and helping others, I think that the day can come in the not too distant future. Well, it certainly can come. But I think that we too may have a chelek in reversing these ugly statistics of the extent of the intermarriage, the extent of assimilation, the extent of disenfranchisement, the extent of people drifting from Yiddishkeit, and hopefully will be zeiche bekorov to the kiyum of that nevuah, umola oretz deres Hashem kimayim layam mechasim.